Welcome to the sixth lecture in the Your Five Faces of God lecture series. This lecture is entitled Water. The organs of water are kidney and bladder. The emotion is fear, and the virtue to be cultivated is wisdom. So this is about the water element, and as I mentioned in the intro, the emotion of the water element is fear, and when respected and mastered, it helps us to develop wisdom by facing our fears and taking action that develops our ability to replenish our chi, or life force. When fear is imbalanced, we tend to either tightness and overly conservative behavior or recklessness, and recklessness can take many forms, which we'll go through. In this lecture, I'll go through the nature and role of water, the nature of fear, and why fear is necessary both for survival and realizing our destiny. I'll go into the virtue of wisdom in more detail and the corresponding distortions of tightness and recklessness. The water officials are the kidney, which is the minister of the treasury. I think of the kidneys as being the banker of the body because they store and protect our life force. And then the bladder is the minister of the water district, who aids the minister of the treasury in conserving the essence and life force of the body, as well as keeping it pure by excreting the impure. We'll go through the kidney's functions briefly to get a fuller idea of how it relates to the expression of fear and the generation of wisdom, and how its primary function really is about maintaining our reserves. And then we'll go through the bladder's functions and how it helps to express our destiny that's contained in our constitutional reserves. And then finally, after exploring the nature of fear and wisdom and the distortions around fear, then we'll go through some common beliefs about the world and about fear that keep us from honoring our nature. Water is a bit confusing to understand in some ways. We started our journey with wood, and the image of the tree is in many ways easier to grasp and is a good beginning point because it corresponds to the spring and to rebirth and to the idea of actually reaching for heaven. We finished our last lecture with metal and the ideal of contraction in the fall back to the core and the ending of a phase of growth and development. Water represents this phase in between, so we've come full circle now, and water represents a state of maximum contraction before the spring and before the bursting forth of new life, and it's a concentration of life force that enables renewal to begin. And it's said in Chinese medicine that the water represents the Tao in many ways. It is the first stage of manifestation of the Tao in material form. And it, in more tangible terms, it's the source of our genetic inheritance. So the kidneys, being the yin organ of the water, are the repository of our genetic information. So it represents our resources, especially our constitutional resources, you know, what we acquired from our parents at birth, as well as our potential for growth, or in other words, our destiny. The Tao represents everything, the dark and the light, and so it includes both the unknown and the scary parts of existence, as well as the unknown and scary parts of our genetic inheritance. One of the sayings about the universe in Taoism is that the Tao gives birth to the one gives birth to the two gives birth to the three, and the three gives birth to the 10,000 things. Now, Tao is existence before it's taken form, and in essence, that's everything in the universe, or if you accept God as being omnipotent and omnipresent, which means everywhere, and then hence in everything in the universe, then the Tao is God. And the Tao then gives birth to the One, which is just chi. It's just the energy of potential. But then the one gives rise to the two. And this is yin and yang, but this is the forces of light and darkness, and this is the complementary nature of the universe. We can't know light without dark, we can't know warm without cold, and we can't know good without evil. And then the two gives birth to the three, and the three is typically referred to as heaven, which is yang energy and represents spiritual perfection, the earth, which is being substantial, and then man. And man is supposed to bridge heaven and earth. And then the three gives birth to the 10,000 things. And so by man, by bridging heaven and earth, and having this material substance of form, which is stored in the kidneys, the essence of the person is stored in the kidneys, as well as their genetic material, then man's activity in the world gives rise to the 10,000 things, which is not an exact number. Some translations say to all things, and this is a statement from the Tao Te Ching. So yin and yang, darkness and light, heaven, earth, and man are really the primary nature of the universe. That's what we have to work with. Now, to correlate it back to that idea of genetic inheritance, molecular biology research shows that buried within everyone's genetic code is the potential for health, as well as the potential for a multitude of diseases. So there is the theoretical potential for all manner of diseases, which hopefully remain unexpressed, buried in our genetic code, essentially no matter how healthy we appear on the surface. According to Dr. Bruce Lipton's research, whether or not disease or health is expressed out of this potential in our genetic code is largely a matter of our perceptions or beliefs about the world, that our biology is essentially influenced by our beliefs, which generate an energy state, which actually determine which parts of our genetic code are expressed. And so this is in the way, this is sort of a modern explanation of the idea that water represents the Tao. The Tao is everything. It's the darkness and the light. It's the stuff we think is pretty and that we like, and it's also the bits that are ugly and scary. And that's our that's our nature. That's our deepest nature of our inheritance. So water then represents the potential for everything, including darkness and including fear. Fear and darkness are unavoidable because they are an integral part of reality and hence an integral part of our nature. But within water is also the material and the drive for realizing all potential. We must dip into these depths, into these resources, to move forward in life and to achieve our destiny. And in so dipping, we must face our fears and our darkness and come to terms with them. Here's another quote from the Tao Te Ching. The highest good is like water. Water is good at benefiting the 10,000 things, and yet does not contend with them. It dwells in places the multitudes detest. Therefore, it is closest to the Tao. Well, like many poems, I find that a bit cryptic on first reading, but there is actually a lot of insight and wisdom in there, is that water moves forward and reaches all things and ultimately benefits all things, and yet, because it contains darkness, and when you go deep enough under the water, it will be dark, then people don't care to look there, and so that's the places the multitudes detest. The other aspect of this is that by going in and dipping in into the depths of our resources and being willing to see the parts of ourselves that we may not be proud of or we may not consider to be the highest aspect of our nature, that's also at those depths where we find our greatest strength and our greatest resources and our greatest intuition. And in that sense, then, contained in those depths is the stuff that aids actually developing things in the world, making a mark on the world, or benefiting the 10,000 things. And yet, if this is done gracefully, we do not contend with the 10,000 things. We're content to fulfill our destiny without having to actually dominate others. And so this actually then refers to an imbalance of water can lead to an over-competitiveness, that your goals must be achieved at the expense of anyone or anything in your way. So then the idea of water then representing our inheritance then brings us to that our inheritance contains our destiny, and our life then is a story of development and maturation that essentially fills the time between birth and death. Water also represents the season of winter when growth stops for reflection and concentration of resources before moving forward again. It is a time to learn from the previous phase of growth and move forward with greater wisdom and greater purity of spirit. Water is the motive force behind growth, and cultivating wisdom keeps us moving forward towards our destiny with minimal distraction. Here's a quote from Baihu Dong, an ancient Chinese medicine writer and Taoist scholar. Wisdom proceeds unceasingly without doubt or uncertainty. Water likewise moves forward without uncertainty. So then the nature of water is, put simply, that it asks the question, what is the way forward? Or, more accurately, how do I face my fear and move forward wisely? So then, the nature of fear is to make us aware of the need to preserve and honor our resources. Our resources I talked about in the previous section was our birthright of inherited genetic material. This also contains our original chi, that allotment of chi which gets us going in the world. But after we are birthed, then we need to replenish that chi through our ability to gather energy from our food and gather energy from the air and then successfully transform that into usable chi in the body to replenish the allotment of chi we got at birth. So really then, this is without that life force, we die. So the role of fear is to make us then aware of the need to preserve and honor that our resources, and the first and foremost of those is our life force. Its first job then is to recognize danger so that we do not lose our life due to a careless misstep. It is fear that makes us cautious near a cliff or precipice. Fear that makes us look both ways when crossing the street. This conserves our life force or chi. It is also fear that makes us read the fine print in a contract and order an inspection when buying a house, which conserves our money resources, which is another important aspect of our ability to provide for our needs. Fear is necessary to preserve existence and is unavoidable. Because fear makes us aware of our mortality, people can either try to avoid fear by avoiding dangerous situations, which means all change, because all change includes some risk, or they can seek fear because it makes them feel more alive. Paradoxically, the fear of death and fear of our mortality can make us crave an experience of being really, really alive in order to essentially distract ourselves from the fear of mortality. And hence, any kind of thrill-seeking behavior and dares, and there's even TV shows like this. There's one in America called Fear Factor, and I think that was actually developed out of a European show called Now or Neverland. And so, but the idea is people being exposed to extreme challenges that push their ability to face their fear to the limit, and it's the excitement of it is really the excitement of it, that experience of really testing your fear then makes you feel more alive. Now, a certain amount of facing your fears and overcoming them is how we develop wisdom, and that's really the more natural function of fear is that. And mentally, fear sharpens our focus. When we do experience fear, our bodies produce adrenaline, and this prepares the physical body for action, but it also stimulates hyper-focus or hyper-alertness to concentrate our mental resources so that we can ask wisely when we're faced with a dangerous situation or a risky situation. This is the time when we want to think the most accurately, not necessarily take the most time, but at all costs avoid the wrong decision without taking too much extra time to find the best decision. So in an extreme situation, such as a car accident, even our perception of time alters, and everything appears in slow motion, and this can give the person greater time to react. I remember in my own life one time where I nearly had an accident on a motorcycle, and the few seconds that it took me to regain control of the motorcycle without actually going down, in my perception, lasted roughly an eternity. That's an exaggeration, but it seemed like an hour that my sense of time skewed so much. So it's interesting then that our sense of actual time then seems strongly related to fear. Fear advises us of the risk in an activity or other choice in life. Our reaction to fear determines whether we take action that builds wisdom, or if we avoid growth by taking the most conservative path, or if we risk our lives and health by ignoring the fear. Fear asks, should I do this, or should I proceed? Just because there is fear doesn't mean we should do it or shouldn't do it. And by that I mean we shouldn't engage in activity just because it has fear and that makes us feel more alive. And at the same time, just because an activity conjures up some element of risk or danger doesn't mean we should necessarily avoid it. What really needs to happen is that we perceive whether or not this fear or danger represents a true challenge to us, or that is insurmountable, that we are incapable of addressing, or whether or not we can actually successfully tackle that. So I spent many years in Hawaii and did a lot of body surfing while I was there. And the surf is always something that has to be respected. But for some people, dangerous surf is 3 foot. And for other people, dangerous surf is 20 feet. And really, depending on the person's strength and skill, whether or not that a particular day of surf is dangerous or not, really is a relative comparison between the person's skill level and the size of the surf. And there's no way to say without reservation that any particular activity is inherently dangerous or too risky or inherently safe for everybody. And so fear makes us ask, am I able to take on this challenge? Do I have the resources to address this successfully? During the course of our life, we should be developing our skills and our ability, and hence the answer to any particular question should change over time as we develop. So really fear asks, should I do this, or should I proceed, or am I capable of this challenge at this time? Is this an appropriate or wise risk? Which brings us on to wisdom. Now, wisdom describes the ability to act in a way that uses our resources wisely. We associate wisdom with age because we develop it from the trial and error of life experience, and we hope that as we age, we are able to act more effectively and with fewer mistakes. The man of wisdom perceives calamity or good fortune when it is still remote, and understands what is beneficial or harmful when it is still early. Seeing a beginning, he knows what its end will be. That's a quote from Deng Changshu, an ancient philosopher. So what that implies for me is that the man of wisdom apparently has the ability to see into the future. So if you can see whether or not the calamity or good fortune is in the offing early on, well, then it allows you to make much wiser choices. So seeing a beginning and knowing what the end will be sounds like seeing the future. Now, if we break it down, it really breaks down into two things. One, life experiences gives us the ability to recognize the early signs of profit and loss, and some of that is trial and error. If we make a mistake and we lose on something, that we invest in something either with our energy or our time or our money, and that investment doesn't pay off, it behooves us to think back and engage our memory to, okay, what were the signs at the beginning of this venture that might have led me to believe that it wasn't the right way to go? And then we can learn from that. The more we learn from that, the more we can recognize the early signs of profit or loss or gain or loss from the initial beginnings of an activity, and then choose more wisely. But the other aspect is the ability to access our instinctive or intuitive nature. And this is another aspect of what water represents, is that our subconscious mind theoretically contains all the knowledge of collective consciousness. And so really, in doing something where we're doing a form of muscle checking to ask questions, we, regardless of the technique we're using of dowsing or muscle checking or, you know, pendulum, we're essentially asking our own intuitive access into universal knowledge for an answer beyond our conscious reasoning. And so what this implies is that there actually is knowledge that could be available to us to help us recognize in the beginning what the end will be, even if we haven't had that exact experience before. And this ability to access our instinctive or intuitive knowledge in our depths comes from the water element, because the water element represents the major part of our subconscious mind. So really, if we're going to act wisely, the man of wisdom both relies on actual experience in his life and his ability to dip into the deep pool of knowledge that is associated with water and with the Tao. And again, the Tao is all things, all that there is. And so in that aspect, the true nature of our subconscious mind is actually the collective consciousness of the universe, which is a longer way of saying the Tao. So wisdom then is the ability to see potential while also recognizing the limits of your resources, and is able to balance the two. Never attempting anything is not recognizing or honoring your potential, and there is no opportunity for growth then. Water provides the impetus for the growth that the wood element plans. The kidneys store the will, and the positive expression of will generates wisdom. In fact, these two words sound alike in Chinese. The will is zhi, and wisdom is also zhi. The characters are different, but the pronunciation is actually the same. So attempting everything squanders your limited life force or other resources, such as money, and can be described by the phrase, biting off more than you can chew. This includes attempting to go beyond your resources so that you exhaust yourself in the achievement. So skill and ability then stem from water, and they stem from an accurate perception of what is possible and then going for it. And that what is possible is an honest appraisal of the challenges, which then fear is what alerts us to those challenges, as well as the ability to look into our depths and determine whether or not we actually currently have the resources to attack that challenge. So this idea of skill and wisdom, even it applies in all endeavors of a life, even including athletic ability. And so one aspect of many sports is not just the ability to perform the feat well, it's the ability to be aware of your reserves and mastering that ability to not exhaust all your reserves before the event is over. So for a prize fighter who has to go 15 rounds in the ring, he must be aware of how much energy has left and not try to expend all of his energy in the early rounds in the hope of defeating his opponent instantly. Because if he doesn't manage to knock his opponent out in the early rounds and spends too much energy, he'll surely be exhausted and an easy target in the final rounds. I'm actually reminded of a story that I learned about living in Hawaii, which is the home of the Ironman triathlon, which is a truly formidable athletic endeavor of swimming almost 3 miles, around 5 kilometers, and then bicycling 112 miles, which is really near 200 kilometers, and then running a marathon after that, all in the same day. And one of the early winners and masters of the event was a gentleman named Dave Scott, and for years nobody could beat him. And then an athlete named Mark Allen, who was a really incredible athlete, decided he was going to enter the race and win. And for several years in a row, he tried to win the title away from Dave Scott. But his mistake each time was not necessarily that he wasn't faster or stronger, but that he didn't understand the pacing requirements. And so one year he tried to outdistance Dave Scott in the bike ride, and in the marathon he ran out of energy and was passed by Dave Scott. And then the next year Mark Allen decided, okay, I won't try to pass him in the bike ride, I'll wait until the run. And halfway through the marathon he felt like he was pretty strong, and he started pulling away and outdistancing Dave Scott. He still ran out of energy and had to slack off of his pace, and still ended up losing the race. And the year he finally won was when he decided that, to honor the fact that Dave Scott had obviously figured out how to manage his reserves, and he stayed literally within arm's length for 8 hours throughout the swim, throughout the bike ride, and for 25 miles of the marathon. And only in the last mile, when the finish line was literally in sight, did he summon up whatever reserves he had left for a sprint to outdistance him. And so there, actually, not just having good running ability or good bicycling ability or good swimming ability, that wasn't enough to win the race. What was necessary was to really honor that if you spend your reserves too early, you will run out before the race is over. And the importance of that analogy is that applies to life. In Chinese medicine, the kidneys, which are the yin organ of the water element, store our life force. They store our original qi and our essence, that's our endowment or allotment of energy from our parents to begin life with. We can replenish it carefully, but when we spend all of it, that is actually the end of life. And so this is why some people age much faster than others. Some people are old at 40 and other people are young at 70. And so the chronological age has far less to do with whether or not we show symptoms of aging, and far more to do with whether or not we're able to respect our resources and pace ourselves so that we can go the distance. All right, so one of the ideas is that all skill and all ability really stem from the ability of the water element to accurately perceive our resources and take action to develop and utilize those resources for empowering our activities in the world. So some other ways of describing the virtue of wisdom then is the ability to have concentration and the ability to access intuition and having clear perception and insight. Skill results from the application of wisdom, as does all ability. Ingenuity is also an aspect of wisdom, where we are able to really utilize everything we know, as well as the creativity engendered by preserving our life and our life force. There's the saying that necessity is the mother of invention, and the drive within the water element in the kidneys to preserve our life force, and not just to preserve it, but to replenish it, is the source of ingenuity and problem solving. So acumen or shrewdness in assessing situations or people, cleverness in solving problems, power, the actual power to get things done, and an expression of personal power and self-assurance and confidence, all are representations of wisdom. And finally, bravery is part of the virtue of fear, is that just because we have fear doesn't mean we can't be brave. Bravery is clearly acknowledging the fear and yet trusting and having faith that your resources are sufficient to carry you through. So wisdom is the virtue of accepting that we need to fill the time between birth and death with an increasing level of engaging with the world successfully. We each have an individual destiny lying in our potential, contained in our genetic inheritance, and realizing that destiny means honoring our resources. We waste our resources when we do not utilize them, and we waste our resources when we expend them without any respect for their limits. There is no true wealth without wisdom. As an example of this, most people who win the lottery are bankrupt in a very short period of time, as without having obtained the wisdom to generate wealth through sound investment of resources, whether those resources being your mental energy and the use of your time to work productively, or investing the money that you've managed to accumulate in a way that increases it. Nonetheless, it takes wisdom through life experience to increase your wealth. And if you get a windfall through a lottery without having accumulated the wisdom to actually conserve and replenish your resources, then typically the windfall seems so enormous in relation to your perception that it seems inexhaustible. And in reality, the person has soon squandered that windfall, and not just squandered the windfall, but actually racked up debt that is far beyond what they had when they won the lottery. And so they end up actually in worse financial shape for the windfall. So fear should guide action. If we overreact and imagine only the worst case, we either perpetuate and amplify the fear and hence avoid action. We can react also by pretending the fear isn't real and only imagine the best case scenario and hence take needless or stupid risks. Wisdom is the cultivation of perceiving the appropriate risks to take and the appropriate actions to rise to those risks. So that brings us to our first distortion, which I've called tightness. Now, fear of loss is natural. And, of course, the underlying fear is the fear of losing our life. But fear of losing money, fear of losing time, this is natural. If we overreact to this fear, we become overly conservative. So we need to acknowledge the fear by reading the fine print and possibly choosing another course of action. But if we instead avoid any risk, we become tight with our resources. Physically, this can result in a contraction, as our perception of the world as a risky place creates a physical armoring pattern. Mentally, if we are too afraid of never receiving any more money, we become tight or stingy with spending money, and we become over-conservative with never letting go of any of our money, and Of course, most people with money say it takes money to make money. You've got to actually invest something in order to increase the money you have. Now, metal teaches us that loss is part of divine order, and wood teaches us that our job is to keep growing towards heaven. Water connects these two elements and bridges this natural process of waxing and waning. When we overreact to fear, we are attempting to stop this natural cycle of give and take and this natural cycle of expansion and contraction. Some other words to describe this state of tightness would just be being conservative or orthodox. It could be being stingy or overly frugal. It could be being conventional. And this could mean never trying anything new. So managed to get in my practice the people who are willing to try new things and try things that aren't necessarily accepted by everybody and are willing to try alternative medicine. And yet there's a lot of people out there who are so afraid of the unknown, they'd rather stick with only conventional medicine, even when conventional medicine has acknowledged no possible cure for their condition. And this is an excess of fear leading to being overly conventional or overly conformist or modifying your behavior in another way of doing this. This is being tight with your behavior, of adapting yourself to what you think everybody else expects of you, and hence not taking a risk of expressing your inner truth for fear that somebody might judge you for that. And so it's our fear of judgment that actually leads to conformity. Another word for the fiscal conservatism of excess fear is being miserly. Another word for being overly conventional or conformist is just being rigid in your thought patterns and not being open-minded to even exploring new ways of looking at things. Another way of thinking of it is always thinking small. So certainly people can take too big of a risk and lose everything, and yet never taking risks leads one to playing small, acting small, and achieving very small rewards in life. So the idea of smallness. So tightness, then, another way to put this, represents a focus on the potential loss. We don't try new things, and hence we don't grow in our life skills or wisdom. And in that sense, the tightness then implies a restriction to the natural expansion that we should go through in our being and our wisdom by actually taking on new challenges and learning from them. Now, the opposite side of tightness is the distortion of recklessness. When we reject or dishonor our natural fear, we can become reckless. This may mean literally risking our life, or it may mean risking our financial savings on an unwise investment. Or it may mean risking squandering or exhausting our life force through habitual overwork. So this idea of not really honoring our resources can then lead to recklessness that actually manifests in different ways. There can be the idea of just wild and undisciplined behavior or scattered behavior in an attempt to achieve everything and not focus on anything. It can also be being overly focused on gain and being very driven or very ambitious or obsessed with success. And this can also mean that of being so obsessed by achievement and success that you don't pay attention to anybody else. So anything or anyone in your way is just an obstacle. And so this relentless desire to charge forward can be overshadowing of others or dominating. This idea of avoiding fear or rejecting the fear can create fantasy situations where you create worlds in your head where the fear doesn't exist, and then that's what leads you into an inappropriate course of action. So delusional activities of betting everything on an improbable odd. So an example of recklessness in this way might mean not buying an occasional lottery ticket, but spending half your paycheck every week on buying lottery tickets with the idea that sooner or later it must pay off. And that's not paying attention to the mathematical reality that no matter how many tickets you buy, your chances of actually winning are essentially none, and just slightly above none. And so that's living in a fantasy, delusional world, that instead of honoring the fear that, I don't have enough money set aside for retirement, so maybe I better make a plan. Let's see if I can earn more. Let's see if I can save more. Let's see if I can actually generate a plan of just coming up with a magic bullet, one-shot program to solve everything all at once. And this is a fantasy. So life contains both risk and opportunity. Wisdom is finding the balance between the two. Recklessness stems from dishonoring our natural fears and limitations and surging ahead without caution. Forward movement is always possible, but wisdom chooses the easier path to the reward and the path with less risk. Sometimes there's going to be some risk to get to the reward, but if you have two alternate paths that both lead to the same reward, and one contains substantially less risk than the other, then wisdom helps you choose the easier path or the less risky path. Recklessness is in another sense, is pursuing the reward without concern for the consequences along the way. All right, that brings us to the water officials. Now, the two water officials are the kidney and bladder organs. The kidney is the yin organ, and as with all the organs, the yin organ is the more important of the two. Now, interestingly, with the kidney, although it is a yin organ, it is considered to be the root of all yang, or all activity in the body, as well as the root of all yin in the body, and it is therefore referred to as the root of life. It is considered the repository of, in Western medicine, our genetic information, but really our prenatal chi, which is both the amount of energy we're given at birth to live, and until we can start to replenish our chi through you know, eating and breathing, but it is also this idea of our reserve energy. And so the activity or fire of life is considered to be comes from our original chi and stored in the kidneys. In an ongoing basis, that spark of life is actually stored in the kidneys. And so, hence, it is the root of life. And the idea I mentioned a few minutes ago is that we do have an endowment or allotment of energy at birth, and we can replenish it, but it's not something we can replenish instantly, and so it needs to be husbanded. It needs to be conserved. And so then the consequence of aging is really a result of not honoring our resources, of spending our reserve energy in the kidneys, which is the root of life, too quickly. And when that energy runs out, and then that's death. When it runs low, it's aging. When it runs out, it's death. And so in this way, the kidney energy is really considered to be the root of life. And then one of the functions of the kidneys then is going to be preserving that. Now, the bladder is the yang organ, and it assists the kidney in preserving life force. It also initiates action to build wisdom and clear the impurities from the water element. Now, one of the ideas here is that it's not enough to just preserve the chi we're given at birth, because that's not enough to carry us to old age. We do need to gather more chi as we live. And to do that, we need to take action. when we're really little, all we have to do is swallow and digest the food that is given to us and breathe. But increasing levels of self-responsibility imply that we should actually learn to provide for ourselves as we get older, to be able to manifest the material ability to provide our own home and our own food. And so that's necessary in order to replenish this storehouse of life force. And so to do that, we have to take action. And the bladder, being the yang organ, and yang represents activity, assists the kidney in preserving for life force by initiating action. All right, so the kidneys I refer to as the minister of the treasury. And so the minister of the treasury looks after the valuables stored within and has an eye towards making sure that they're conserved by not overspending, and to make sure that the life force, in this case, is protected. Some of the more detailed functions of the kidneys, and this is a short list, is the kidneys store our essence and our original chi, and this is the constitutional reserves that we receive at birth. It also builds and maintains both the bones and the nervous system. So the bones give us framework and structure to our bodies and hence to our lives. And the nervous system gives us the ability to act and react, and also the ability to focus and concentrate. The kidneys also rule the knees. It's an interesting one because it both governs then with the knees how we move forward and when is it appropriate to step back and change direction because you've arrived at something dangerous like a cliff. The kidneys also govern fertility, and so one idea of preserving our life force is by passing our life force on to our children. And so that's passing our essence, if you will, on to the next generation. Now, the kidneys generate fear. That's one of their major functions. And so, again, fear is something that's there to guide our actions and help us choose a wiser course. And then lastly, the kidneys govern the will. Now, this is the willpower, which is really the will to live and the will to keep growing and achieving and replenishing our life force. So then the primary job of the kidneys is to preserve our birth inheritance and to invest it wisely. They regulate mental alertness, and this helps us to be present to danger and to be able to choose a wise course of action, which helps us to preserve our resources. And then it also preserves our essence by passing it to the next generation. Now, here's some physical manifestations of an imbalance in or weakness in the kidney energy. And these relate to the body systems that the kidney rules, including the low back. And so low back pain is a common sign of kidney imbalance and hence of fear imbalance. Frequent urination or having to get up at night to urinate are also signs of kidney weakness. Night sweats and hot flashes, temperature control issues in that way, are signs of kidney weakness. And infertility or miscarriage, or in women, and impotence in men are also signs of weakness of the kidney energy. Now, mentally, anxiety, fear of aging and death, paranoia as an extreme form of fear or anxiety, and asocial or antisocial behavior, avoiding contact with other people, is a fear-based response and represents a kidney imbalance. So, interestingly, atheism and the inability to have faith in divine will is also a representation of kidney weakness. So, and this sounds like a bit of a difficult thing, is that without kidney chi, it's difficult to have faith in divine will or in connection to the Tao, and it's difficult to to be able to master your fear without a sense of belonging to the universe in connection to God or to the Tao. And so, but once you're on that pattern of deficient kidney chi, then doubt in personal connection to the universe or to God becomes a psychological feature. And really, the lesson in the response to fear is that it is only by dipping into the depths of our being and accepting that it is all there, the darkness and the light within ourselves, that we can actually perceive the light, that we can find the gold at the bottom of the mine, and to use the metal metaphor, but that because we're willing to look at all the dirty stuff as well, and out of that we can cultivate the idea of actually achieving things by looking into the depths, mastering our fear, and moving forward anyways with our best guess at what the appropriate action is. And that achievement actually of trusting your inner resources and trusting your intuition builds up faith in your connection to your inner knowledge of the divine. All right, so the bladder is the yang organ, and I've called it the minister of the water district. It's often referred to as the district official. Now, the first thing is that the bladder assists the kidneys in their job of preserving essence and qi by releasing excess fluids and dirty fluids, and hence to keep our energy and our fluids pure. It also helps to express the destiny contained in our birth nature. Now, one of the things that helps to visualize that is that the bladder meridian actually goes down the back and down the back of the legs and effectively rules the back muscles and the calf muscles. And so for us to move forward in life, we both contract our back muscles to stand up a bit more erect, but actually to arch our back a little bit in support of stepping out forward. And then the contracting the calf muscles allows you to push off from your rear foot so that you can step forward with the other foot. And so actually stepping into the world or stepping forward in life is ruled by the bladder energy. And so this is the actually taking action to move forward and do something about replenishing your chi. And so in this yin-yang balance between the kidneys and the bladder, the kidney has a bit more of a focus on preserving what you have, but then part of preserving what you have is seeing that what you have is invested so that it comes back with interest. And that's the sense in which the bladder actually assists, is it takes the action to invest your energy and into projects that can give you a source of nourishment in the future. Now, the more physical or more classical functions of the bladder then are clearing water. So this is storing and releasing urine, and that helps to keep the body clean and functioning efficiently, and in that way it helps to preserve our essence. And along with clearing the water, it eliminates the impure, to excrete impure water, as well as we do some emotional clearing with the bladder as well. It generates fear, and this fear propels us into action. So a bit of difference in the kidney fear and bladder fear is that kidney fear is that protective fear to conserve our core essence, and it tends to make our body smaller. We contract in, and we tend to curl our back in and flex at our pelvis, and if it's really exaggerated, we drop into a bit of a crouch. The bladder kind of fear says, I've got to go into action. And so it contracts the back of the body and propels you forward. often people are trapped between these two fears, and in body work it's called the red light and the green light reflex. When you see the red light, your natural tendency is to stop, but not just to stop, but to flex at the pelvis and bend your knees, and then actually curl your body inwards. And so it's a contractive, protective posture when you feel like you're being attacked. The green light reflex is green light, gotta go. And so it's this stepping forward. And what happens with many people in old age is because they're not honest about their fear, they're just habitually either stepping forward to in response to their fear of not doing enough, or they're curling in as a physical protection thing, is that if they master neither of these two fears, then there tends to be a function of being stooped forward and yet with the head pulled up and the neck essentially juts forward and the chin juts forward, and the person is only able to really shuffle. This is called senile posture because you're so confused you don't even know what you're afraid of. You're not sure whether or not you're more afraid of stopping or more afraid of going. And so this is the balance between the kidney and the bladder. So its primary job for the bladder is to aid the purity of kidney essence by releasing the impure. Also, initiating that forward movement by controlling the muscles of striding forward, and hence taking action to replenish the reserves of the kidneys and to perpetuate our original qi and our jing, our essence. Now, we can react to fear of depletion of our resources with overactivity and frenzy when our resources are low. So paradoxically, when somebody feels like they don't have enough, they don't have enough money, they don't have enough life force, they don't have enough energy, then they can, rather than being conservative, they can go into overdrive and just go into extreme activity in an attempt to get there faster before all the energy runs out. So some physical manifestations of bladder imbalance are back pain, and then neck pain, including an occipital or tension headache. When the muscles in the back of the neck are really tense, then we get this headache that begins at the back of the head and creeps forward. The bladder meridian begins at the eye, and so eye pain is a frequent manifestation of bladder imbalance. And then frequent and urgent urination is another aspect of this, because one of the functions of the bladder is to control our sexuality, which it is through our sexual expression that we can actually conceive another generation to preserve our essence. And so then when you combine fear and sexuality, you get mentally suspicion and jealousy. And so feelings of being suspicious and jealousy, or fear that our sexual partner is in some ways not being honest or faithful with us, and this often is what leads to urinary tract infections, is a suspicion or jealousy being contained in the bladder meridian. Because of the control over the moving forward, then a bladder imbalance either represents as being over-enthusiastic and charging ahead with everything, or being lazy and unwilling to try anything, which is a weakness of the bladder energy. All right, now it's time to go through some of the belief systems which affect the water element. So again, to remind you, all of our reactions to life come from our perceptions of life and how the world is. How we perceive our options and the balance between risk, reward, and our resources or personal power are the fundamental concepts behind these beliefs that I'm going to present. So challenge, risk, and fear are natural to life. Growth is also natural. An excess of fear stems from the idea that the world is inherently dangerous, or that we are inherently powerless, and hence unable to rise to the challenges that life presents. This leads to tightness and conservatism. It's important to recognize that this perception of the world may begin quite early. In fact, it may often begin with the birth experience. So if the birth is not able to proceed in a natural fashion, it's already a stressful situation. But if the baby is not born in a natural way and removed from the mother before the bonding occurs, then the idea that the world is dangerous can be the first association through which all of the senses imprint. And so an adrenaline surge, which is associated with fear, is natural to birth, and that enables the baby to make it safely through the birth canal. What shuts down the adrenal release is the baby being placed on mother's chest and having skin-to-skin contact to stimulate the sense of touch and eye contact with mother and verbal contact with mother and taste contact with mother, as well as the sense of smell. And so when all the senses are stimulated with a reaffirmation of mother's presence, which has been the most consistent reality for the baby for 9 months, then the adrenal surge is released. If baby is removed to be cleaned up or to allow mother to rest, then the adrenal surge may not relax for several months, up to 3 months. And so then the baby begins life in a fear state. And so this can be a powerful imprinting on the idea that life is inherently a dangerous place. And then any activity in life is going to contain an exaggerated portion of fear. And this can lead to actually either recklessness or tightness and powerlessness. So that's an important thing to recognize. Not that this can't be addressed, but that sometimes you have to see the source of that. That fear can even start in the womb if there's any fear around the baby's health or around mother's ability to give birth safely. Then the baby can imprint on fear even in the womb, and this could become part of the perception of the world. Another way that powerlessness can come about, and for me I'm defining powerlessness, is that the challenges of the world are greater than your ability or your resources. If that's the perception, then you feel powerlessness. And so this can also come from an upbringing where the child is not encouraged to try things and allowed to make mistakes. And so if everything is done for the baby or for the toddler, then they don't gain a healthy ability to learn through trial and error and have the ability and the safety of experiencing failure in a relatively safe environment. And so now that's a balancing act. I mean, you know, the baby or the toddler still needs to have their safety looked out for and not completely ignored. But if the safety is overemphasized, it both creates an over-concern with the dangers in the world and an under-ability to rely on one's own ability to deal with that. And so never teaching a child to swim is not acknowledging that they can learn. Pushing them off the end of the dock as a way to teach them swimming might be an overly aggressive way to teach them that. Admittedly, I said necessity is the mother of invention, but you know, one could find a balance in the middle where the baby is supported in the water and momentarily released and has to attempt to swim their way back to the surface, but without so much fear and without so much trauma. Obviously, for each child, the balance point in there is going to be different, and so being present to that is picking an appropriate training method for the child. So, but nonetheless, that's enough of an example that if you're powerless by expectation, then you won't try things and make mistakes later in life. Now, denial of fear that leads to recklessness is another underlying belief here, and this can either be because somebody perceives their external achievements to be of supreme importance, and regardless of the of the effect that their efforts have on themselves or others. Now, underlying this is actually a fear that the universe isn't good enough already and that you need to do too much. It's essentially, underneath the over-ambition, you can find a fear that God can't actually manage the world, so I better change everything. That's one version of it. Another is that disaster is always around the corner. There could always be another depression, there could always be another crash, and so regardless of how much I have, I need to frantically earn more as a way to avoid the fear of death. And so it's when the fear of death can't be faced that this propels somebody to take needless risks in a frenzied attempt to reaffirm their existence either through activity or achievement. And so, you know, the thrill seeking is one thing I mentioned, but just the overachievement is taking a needless risk with your life force, and you can end up, as many people do, working themselves into exhaustion. So here's some beliefs that are common to water then. Now, many of these, of course, are subconscious but are implied by behavior and actions. So one is simply that I'm out of control, so that the world is so overwhelming that there's no way that I can exert any control over it, and hence I'm out of control. Or, like I mentioned, just simply that the world is dangerous, that the inherent nature of the world is one of danger and threat, and that there's that's a constant undercurrent in the person's experience. So, or the idea that there just isn't enough time. If you are forward thinking enough, you can always imagine more time than you have energy or money for. If you wake up in the morning and you make a to-do list that is several years long, well, then there's no way you're going to get it done before you run out of the day. And so, but the taking on too much of a task like that creates a frenzy of activity. And it's this idea that there isn't enough time, that there isn't another day, and that you have to get everything done today. And so this idea that there isn't enough time is something that is a misperception on the part of the water element. Or that I'm not strong enough. Well, again, there's the balance point that you need to be able to honor the limits to your strength and not take on challenges that are unrealistic for you. But if your ready answer is I can't do anything because I'm not strong enough or powerful enough, then you don't do anything. So the idea that I'm not safe is another way of saying the world is dangerous, and then that provokes the tightness or over-conservativeness. Or another way of saying that is just simply the acceptance of being powerlessness, of being powerless, or I'm not powerful. Different way of saying a similar thing. I can't trust in life. I can't trust in life to provide for me. I can't trust in the universe to provide for me. Another way of saying that is I can't trust in God. I'm not secure in my life. The universe won't provide. These are all similar, but you might resonate with one of them more than another. Or I'll die before my time. Or that the urgency to get someplace is so strong is that I can't let anything get in my way. Or another variant of that is I can't let anyone get in my way. And then another way that exaggerates fear and over-caution or antisocial behavior is just that people are bad or evil. And if you've had enough experience of the world as being dangerous and antagonistic, and or people being dangerous or antagonistic, then that worldview, people are bad or evil, is very limiting because you don't allow yourself to engage in normal social contact, let alone actually embracing developing your ability through investing your time and your effort and your money appropriately. All right, that concludes my lecture on fear and wisdom, and this concludes our series of lectures on your five faces of God. I hope you found these lectures to illuminate your understanding of your process of growing in life and how each one of these emotions can contribute to greater connection to yourself and to others. And if you're a practitioner, I encourage you to see how you can utilize this information in your sessions to get to the deeper roots of illness by getting to the deeper roots of the distortions of our minds. And the other thing I'd like to recommend is that you may want to recommend this series to your clients if you are a practitioner. I've been doing that with some of my own clients who are not practitioners because I want them to understand the message behind their balancings as to help synergize the process of their actual balancings that they receive from me with a more in-depth understanding of how the issues relate to them, so that then they can do their own work and their own synergy with the actual balancing. There will be a questionnaire to fill out posted on the website that you can fill out to if you'd like to receive a certificate of completion for this course. And please don't hesitate to email us at office@bodytalkunlimited.com with any questions or comments or material for future courses. Thank you.